Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. My guest today is the acclaimed award-winning author Chang-Rae Lee. He's the author of 6 novels, the latest of which is a powerful, unpredictable, and compelling chronicle of an aimless college student who learns about the world and what he's capable of in travels to exotic destinations halfway around the world and to a cookie-cutter American suburb. His name is Tiller Bardman. The characters that Chang-Rae Lee invents to propel Tiller's coming of age are surprising, fascinating, and powerfully drawn. Lee writes with insight and authority, and his book is a page-turner that fits squarely in the tradition of great literary fiction. Chang-Rae Lee joins me today to talk about My Year Abroad. Midday gets underway after the news. And good afternoon. Welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you are along with us today. My guest is the award-winning author Chang-Rae Lee. He is the author of 6 novels. The Surrendered, which he published in 2008, was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. Another book, On Such a Full Sea, was a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award and the winner of the Heartland Fiction Prize. His latest novel is a stunning, wild tale whose protagonist is a 20-year-old, somewhat aimless college student from New Jersey named Tiller Bardman. The book is a collection of Tiller's reflections on the relationships he has with a charismatic businessman and later a young mother and her son. It's called My Year Abroad, and Chang-Rae Lee joins us from San Francisco on Zoom. Mr. Lee, it's great to sort of kind of meet you. How you doing?
Nice to meet you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And this book is terrific. I'll confess this is the first of your work that I've read. I've not read the other 5 novels you've written, but I will rectify that situation as soon as I can. I just found this book unpredictable and masterful and compelling, so congratulations on it. It's really terrific.
Thank you so much.
How do you answer the question, what's the book about?
Well, it's the story, of course, is about this Tiller going out into the world. But because he's going out into the world, the story ends up being about so many things because the world holds so many things. It's about the pursuit of business. It's about striver immigrants. It's about a certain kind of obsession with consumption, an insatiable hunger. I think in the end, it's about a certain trying to engage or contact some idea of what vitality really is in this world. And so when I sent Tiller out into this adventure with this Chinese businessman named Peng Lu, I knew that they would encounter all sorts and shapes of folk, villains, practices, cultures. It was something that I really been wanting to do for a long time, but never quite found the right characters to do it with until now.
You know, I talk to a lot of novelists, and it's interesting how they kind of divide, if you will, into 2 camps. It's kind of, let me ask you a kind of chicken and an egg question, which is, did you set out to write a book about those things you just mentioned? You know, finding yourself and consumption and business and whatever, all the different themes. Did you say, I want to comment on those issues, therefore I will concoct these characters, Tiller and Pong and the other people who are part of this book, so that I can make those comments? Or did you just start writing this story about these fascinating characters and you discovered that in the process of writing the story, you were making comments about all of those grander themes you just talked about?
Well, it's more the latter, really. I start And this is my process with all my books. I pretty much start with certain characters and, you know, their consciousnesses, you know, all their backstories, everything that I think that they are. And I the book is in some sense, the story is in some sense a response to what I think those people are interested in or need or need to confront. And for Tiller, you know, as you mentioned, he's kind of an aimless, somewhat indolent, ambitionless kind of kid. And I was thinking about what he needed in his life and asked myself, why do I want to write about this kid? And I felt as if the things that he has to confront are the things that will, of course, bring him out. You know, all the things that he hadn't dealt with in his life, all the kind of wishes and dreams and fantasies that he'd had. And so the story ends up being a way to draw out character in a way that still is, for me, a discovery process. So I don't know everything about the character at the start. I begin to learn about the character as I write each chapter. In some sense, it's as if I'm trying to create the ground on which he'll step by step by step. And that ground becomes firmer and firmer as the novel progresses.
Yeah, it does. And it's wonderful to see that ground become firmer and firmer and to see Tiller grow. He's an incredibly likable character. Do you have a book with you? You're in San Francisco, so we're not in the studio together, but do you have a book in front of you?
Yes, I do.
Would you mind reading for us a description of Tiller that I found just terrific? It's on page 16. Mm-hmm. That second paragraph that begins, "At some point I'll say more about her and my dad," mm-hmm. Clark, and this mm-hmm. is, you know, this is Tiller talking about his parents, but you enumerate all of the things that make Tiller's life what it is, and I think it's right on. So would you read that for us?
Just that paragraph?
Yeah, would you mind? Yeah.
Okay, great. "At some point, I'll say more about my mom and my dad, Clark, and how our nuclear family all kind of precipitated out and got scattered and blown away. But for now, let's just say that up to last year, I pretty much always lived in Dunbar. I was home again for the summer after attending a second year at my small, expensive college," which small, expensive college in particular doesn't matter, "and was set up for a semester abroad program in another place that doesn't matter. Except to say that the college and the semester abroad program were one and the same in terms of people and anticipations. Namely, we were generally well off and generally bright and generally interested in the things worth being interested in, like sustainability and creativity and equality and justice, but also generally keen on hooking up and cool beaches and cheap, authentic enough ethnic restaurants and making connections with people who might offer opportunities for cultural and professional experiences that were life-changing, but hopefully not too much. We would return to the rest of our junior year and bear down and party that much harder in reward, but also for being deeply anxious about the future, a future others before us have definitely ruined, but that we would be responsible for, whether we wanted to be or not."
Yeah, I just think that's perfect. And I also think that this book validates for me a theory I've always held, which is that your 20s are a really difficult time. 20s are tough. That era between 20 and 30 can really be difficult because you're on that cusp of adulthood. You're trying to make your way in the world, and you don't have the regularity, the predictability, the dimension of your life that other people decide. You know, you will go to this class, you will go to this place. You got to start making it up on your own, because later he describes himself as not even vanilla, but an experimental flavor that no one tries again. I mean, he's real down on himself for most of the novel. You teach at Stanford, and one would think that the kids at Stanford are these, you know, great standout superstars who maybe aren't so much like Tiller Bardman, but that experience of being, you know, not a teenager, not an adult, sort of the in-between. Was that something you were conscious of?
Yeah. Absolutely, and that's that's one of the reasons why I decided that the hero and narrator of this novel would be this 20-year-old kid, rather than someone my age. I'm middle age in my mid-50s. And in some ways, this book is a hybrid between a coming-of-age novel and a midlife crisis novel. But I didn't want the narrator to be someone who had had all these experiences, who had had all these reckonings already, and who was maybe too settled in his life. I decided that a 20-year-old person would be better, just for the reasons you mentioned. Someone who is putting on costumes, as it were, modeling himself, not modeling himself after others, who has enough responsibility to get in trouble, but maybe not enough to actually make a difference to things. So someone in this kind of limbo, and not super, as he's self-styles, super elite or competent, like, you know, some of my students are. Well, all of my students are. But I will tell you, I know that all of my students also feel inside that they're not very special, that they don't know as much as they think or say they know. And I think we all feel that way. So Tiller's somebody who's you know, full of capabilities, full of potentialities, but he just hasn't tapped them yet. And I guess the story for me was a way to put him through his paces and to see, well, how can he find out about what he has to offer to the world and to himself?
And that's one of the things that makes his mentor so interesting, Pong, because Pong seems to understand, seems to intuit that Tiller has more to offer than even Tiller himself thinks. And Pong seems to have great confidence in Tiller's ultimate abilities. And that's a great, you know, springboard for Tiller himself. I want to talk about Pong in a second, but back to Tiller. Talk about the importance of his racial and ethnic identity. He describes himself as 12.5% Asian.
Right.
He's an almost white boy, you know?
Yes, he jokingly calls himself low yella, you know, being 1/8. And I intentionally made him only 1/8, just a small fraction. It was a deliberate fraction, as another reader very accurately told me, because I didn't want his race to be something that most people noticed in his life. That in the context of where he grew up, he essentially passed as just another, as he would say, average white boy. Nothing special, nothing remarkable. And that's part of his psyche. That's part of his self-view. But that there was always also in the background this little buzz, this little nightlight that was always there, which is, you know, the legacy he has from his mother, who's obviously a quarter Asian. And what that legacy leads him to, which is a curiosity and growing interest in his Asian side. And so it's no accident that, of course, that I have him meet this Chinese entrepreneur, and that all their travels are headed east, as it were, rather than to Europe.
The book is called My Year Abroad. The author is my guest, Chang-Rae Lee. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Talk about Pong and how you concocted him. He is one of the most fascinating characters I've ever encountered in a novel. And he's just, he surprises at every page. I mean, this is one of those books I had no idea what he was going to say next or what was going to happen next. It was terrific.
Well, he's based upon a friend, an acquaintance of mine back east, and also some other fellows that I knew. He's kind of an amalgam of a new kind of immigrant that I'd been encountering. Someone who feels, who comes here and feels as if they're not behind the eight ball, that they have a lot of skill, a lot of knowledge. Maybe it's the, you know, the data age, and maybe it's the way that globalization has made the world that much smaller and within grasp of a lot of people. So he's based upon this kind of, you know, not oligarch billionaire type, just a small-time guy who has big-time dreams and who feels as if, you know, that who has that pluck, that that irrepressible energy for business and for looking for opportunities. And that was the kind of fellow that I had seen so much of when I was a kid. I grew up in an immigrant family. I came here when I was three in my parents' generation. And maybe because, you know, I've lived here so long and I'm settled in my own life and career, I'd kind of lost that, you know, that kind of verve that I'd always found so appealing and so inspirational. And I wanted to write about him. So in fact, Pong was the original, was the seed for the story entirely. He was the character I thought I was going to write about exclusively. But it turns out, of course, that I invented Tiller because I was more trying to interrogate, I suppose, my interest and my enrapture with a fellow like Pong, someone who, could see everything, you know, could see all the opportunities, especially, it turns out, in Tiller.
Yeah, and you write at one point that he had a bottomless wonder for our multitudinous human family. I mean, Pong is exceptionally interested in everything. He's interested in relationships, he's interested in business, he's interested in chemistry, he's just interested. And he has a fertile imagination and an inquisitiveness, which I suppose is one of the reasons that he is successful, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's an ingredient, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. He doesn't feel as if, as I said before, that anything is beyond him, not because he's so special, but just because he has that passion. And a lot of it comes from, of course, and this is something that you know, I've written a lot of stories about immigrants, and I know that a lot of people, maybe too many people, see an immigrant, see a newcomer, and think, oh, that's their job in this country. This is their little function. But as with Pong, as with most all immigrants, they have such deep stories in their backgrounds. They carry so much with them, so much weight, so much history, so many experiences that precede their being in this place. And so I write about that too in the book, about his family during the Cultural Revolution, and all the things that he'd endured and survived to get to this place. Something that I think, he wants Tiller to know, and something that Tiller finds valuable in terms of, you know, thinking about their own relationship.
Chang Ray Lee is the author of six novels, the latest of which is called My Year Abroad. We'll have more with Chang Ray Lee on the other side of this quick break. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us at @midday WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up Monday on our program, my guest will be Isabel Mercedes Cumming, the Inspector General of the City of Baltimore. We'll talk about some of her recent investigations, including her report on Baltimore State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby and the joint report her office issued with the Inspector General in Baltimore County about the water system that the two jurisdictions share. Plus, the founder and editor of Be More Art, Kara Ober, will join me for Midday on the Arts. Kara will suggest some visual arts exhibitions that are worth checking out this spring. If you've just joined us today, my guest is the author Chang Ray Lee. He teaches writing at Stanford University. His new novel is called My Year Abroad. If you'd like to join our conversation with Chang Ray Lee, our number 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @midday WYPR. And to follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWYPR. So, Mr. Lee, the love story that is also part of this novel between Tiller and a woman named Val, who's a bit older than Tiller, and Val has an 8-year-old son named Victor Jr. They call him VJ or Veej. The way you describe Tiller's feelings for Val, I just thought was such a beautiful formulation. You say he was a comet of devotion hurtling straight into her loam of goodness. I just love that. I had to look up the word loam. That was new to me.
it's a nice sounding word.
It's a really nice sounding word. It's soil is what it is.
Yes,
but her loam of goodness, and he was a comet of devotion. When you are writing, and this is a big, sprawling novel. I mean, this is almost 500-page novel. This is, you ain't cutting corners in a book like this, you know? And when you, to come up with that kind of, you know, beautiful turn of phrase, is that something that comes easily, or it comes, you know, as a matter of inspiration, or is it, you know, sweat and toil and work? I mean, how does it come to you?
Well, that's a good question. I get that asked that a lot. You know, as a novelist, and I pretty much exclusively write novels, not short stories. As you say, I've got a big canvas there, and there are lots of words, you know, probably in this novel, 170,000 words, something like that. But the key to me is not just to focus on the story, and this novel has a lot of story in it, a lot of events, a lot of episodes, a lot of situations, lots of characters. But in a funny way, I try not to think about those things as much as people probably assume I do. In fact, what I think about mostly is sentence by sentence by sentence. So I try to block out everything that I think should happen next or in 2 chapters hence. But And instead focus on where, say, Tiller is right now with Val, what he's thinking about right now with Val, all the sensations, you know, the complete tiny universe of their moment. And then look for the language that's going to best and most, in my view, this is what why I write, you know, what most beautifully will express that moment and make it come alive. And for me, and maybe that's because I, you know, was someone who came into the language not knowing the language. I remember learning English. And then once I began to love literature and love reading, I loved poetry. And so I loved most of all, just the sound and music, the cadences of language. And to me, if I can't find that right sentence, then the actual thing itself doesn't feel real enough or vital enough or vibrant enough. So I take a long time, and it takes me a long time to write these books, just because I labor over each sentence, and there's no other way I could do it, and there's no other way I could, I think, find any satisfaction in it.
How long did this one take you to write?
On and off, 5 years. I was, you know, moving. I moved out to the West Coast. I took a new job at Stanford. So there are lots of other things going on. And then because of the nature of the book, as you mentioned, there's this whole love story in the book. They're kind of two novels in this novel. A novel of adventure with Pong, and then a more domestic drama with Val. So I think I ended up writing two books or even more. You know, there's a lot on the cutting room floor that you didn't see. I always think that I would like to write a short, sweet little book in a few months. And that's always my plan, but it never happens that way.
Right. I remember talking to Alice McDermott, who traditionally takes 6 or 7 years in between novels. And she told me, she said, you know, somebody wrote her an email saying, what do you do in between novels? You know? And Alice is like, I'm writing the next novel. What do you think? What do you mean, what do I do?
I would like tell I'm that reader, you don't want to know what I do.
Yeah, right. That sausage you do not want to see being made. The book is called My Year Abroad. Chang Ray Lee is the author. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. I think the other thing that kept me so compelled by this novel was your handling of for lack of a better term, the great reveal. Right from the beginning of the novel, Tiller, who narrates this thing, tells you right up front, there's stuff I'm not telling you yet. You know, but you'll get to it. We'll get to it eventually. But there's stuff I'm not telling you yet. Anton Chekhov, and believe me, I just happen to have stumbled across this in another book. It's not like I can hang around and, you know, off the top of my head, quote pithy statements by Anton Chekhov. But I happen to know, because I just read this a week ago and I haven't forgotten it yet, that he said that the secret to boring people lies in telling them everything. Mm-hmm. And I think you do a masterful job of letting us know what's going on in just the right order and in just the right cadence and tempo and time. Is that something you're conscious of?
Well, you know, when your narrative is the art of purposeful and graduated disclosure. And, you know, so it's this dance that you do. Chekhov is, of course, always right. You can't tell people everything, because then it's over. And the whole point of narrative is to suspend, to put people in abeyance and to have them wonder just that bit longer. So even if you give them, say, an object that might be used later, you have to make it real now. And describe it long enough and well enough that it sits there, like, in sort of glows in the reader's mind. And readers are very sophisticated, and this is what I tell my students all the time. Readers, even if they don't think of themselves as sophisticated, are, you know, they remember everything. And those little things that you can lay down and know that you're going to return to, you just have to, in some ways, practice a little patience, I think. And trust in the reader, and follow up things in a natural and patient way, so that it feels as if when it comes to fruition, and that that there was no other way, that was inevitable, but also fresh and still surprising.
I imagine you have writers that you admire and read or reread. How about readers? What is your ideal reader? Can you describe the person in an ideal world for you that you would have read your work?
No one's ever asked me that question, actually. That's amazing. Well, I think I know that reader. I think it's a reader who has an appreciation for the mysteries of the human heart and mind. And that, I think, and which means that I think that reader has an openness and vulnerability to ideas, notions, that they are free from too many, you know, hard views about how people should be, i.e. how stories should be. And I think that's my ideal reader, someone who's truly open and as I said, vulnerable, someone who's willing to go places, who's willing to be challenged and shocked, hurt, surprised. So it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, again, a super educated reader. I don't need PhDs. And sometimes PhDs are the most rigid readers, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I see how that would happen because the kind of reading they had to do to get the PhD and the kind of expectations that have been placed on them for their own writing can obviously, you know, can lead to rigidity, I would imagine. Yeah.
And people can come in, PhDs and everybody else, with all these structures that the world has to conform to in the world, including arts, other people, ideas, politics. And I guess, you know, my favorite reader and the one that I, you know, would cherish as someone who would maybe be able to take in as much of my work as possible, you know, sentence by sentence by sentence, is that person who is willing, you know, not lazily and not passively, but willing to follow a certain line. And of course, it'll be, you know, any work is judged on by that reader, and those are individual tastes. But I suppose that's the person that I'd be most tickled by.
We have a caller on the line from Baltimore, Charlotte. Charlotte, welcome to Midday with Chang-Rae Lee.
Hi, thank you both for this.
So, Charlotte, we're having a little trouble with your line there. I'm going to let our director sort that out, and we're going to come back to you, Charlotte, because there's a little trouble hearing you. But Chang-Rae Lee, I was taken by the fact that this book is replete with sex and food and music, sort of like the basic pleasures of life. There's lots of all the three of those things in this. And each of those things plays a pivotal role in the plot, even.
Yes.
Is that a coincidence that like all these earthly pleasures are sort of crammed into one novel? I don't know.
well, this is so much a novel, even though they're going out into the world, as it were. This is so much a novel about the body's experience of the world. It's meant to be literally a sensational novel in terms of, you know, how we as mortal human beings made up of atoms and molecules and cells take in things. I wanted to have Tiller experience all these things, you know, and not just in the sense of hedonism, not just for sensual pleasure, but for sensual, I guess, you know, a certain kind of awakening to the idea that the world is out there and you can taste the world and the world will taste you back in both literal and figurative senses, that it's an interplay. And this is part of his education, of course. And we all know, and I particularly, you know, I'm into food, and that's obviously, you know, it's obvious in the book how central that is in just my own personal life. But the book is not, I hope, ultimately about something palatal, you know, about the taste of food. It's about things like food and sex and music, as you mentioned, and how they are ways for us to touch upon something of the world, and then maybe in the next step touch upon something ephemeral, mysterious and beautiful. And that's something that Tiller, you know, I don't think he's not thinking about that at the beginning of the novel. He's just kind of going through his life with his headphones kind of on mute and everything kind of bland, you know, that mayonnaise is his favorite sauce. And it ends up being very different, of course. He gets a lot of spiciness in his life.
I guess we have figured out the problems with Charlotte. Charlotte, welcome back. How you
Hi.
Doing?
Yes, thank you. So sorry for that. And thank you both for the show. Dr. Lee, you mentioned, I heard you earlier say that immigrants who come here arrive with such vast experience, such rich lives. And I work on anti-racism. And I wondered, how would you suggest that people of mostly this culture, the mainstream, who are pretty much monolingual, monocultural, how would they gain empathy for and appreciation for the lives of immigrants who've gone through so much to come here?
Well, I think that's a great question. You know, aside from, listening to NPR, and I heard a great story on NPR the other day about a family from El Salvador, all the horrible things that they had to go through, all the danger and assaults and their difficulties in Mexico while waiting, trying to apply for asylum in this country. Besides listening to those kinds of stories, reading the paper, reading novels, ask to just try to talk to people. I mean, this is what, when I go someplace, I suppose I'm not a museum goer. I'm not, I love museums, but I find them too crowded. But I love just chatting with the people who are working and people who are just sitting around and just asking about their lives, just having a brief encounter even that maybe can lead to, just an appreciation for the fact that we all carry these amazing experiences, these amazing stories, even if they're modest. Everyone has, this background that once you scratch it a little bit, it's mind blowing. Without that, we see a lot of dehumanization, right? And there's been a lot of news about the attacks on elderly Asian people, particularly out here in my area. Defenseless older Asian people who are just knocked down on the street for no reason. And why does that happen? Well, because they're dehumanized by rhetoric, by the culture. And we all know, of course, that if you had any inkling of who those people were, what they went through, the kinds of work that they did, it'd be much harder for those kinds of things to happen.
Well, it's certainly the case that the characters in this novel, even though they aren't actual humans, are very much humanized, and it's a wonderful experience to get to know them. The novel is called My Year Abroad. The author is my guest, Changrai Lee. We'll have more with Changrai Lee after a quick break. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWYPR. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your NPR news station, member supported 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, my guest today is the novelist Changrai Lee. We're talking about his latest best-selling book, A Sprawling Affair, that takes place in the U.S. and throughout Asia, about a larger-than-life businessman named Pong who mentors a young American college student named Tiller. Pong schools Tiller in the ways of business and finance and takes him on a wild trip that is populated with a fascinating array of characters who are as unusual as they are compelling. Through roughly half of the novel, Tiller reflects on these adventures while coming of age with a girlfriend and her precocious son. The book is called My Year Abroad. It's powerful, suspenseful, hilarious, dark, erotic, surprising. It's all of those things. I really, really like this book. And again, I'm not a book critic. I'm not a lit crit guy. I don't have a PhD in literature. I just know what I like. And this one I really liked a lot. Changrai Lee is with us until the top of the hour. You are welcome to join us as well. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. So Changrai Lee, Blake is writing a novel, or a book, he says. And he says, how do you decide where to edit? I'm at 230,000 words, and I know 50,000 or more need to hit the cutting room floor. So that's a pretty broad question.
It's a pretty broad question.
But you've written a 477-page book here, and you said that you even at that, there's a lot you got rid of.
Yes.
You know, Joyce Carol Oates used to refer to them as my little darlings. You know, she would cut them away.
Yeah, and we have a lot of little darlings as writers and as artists. I think that, you know, maybe I could say to Blake, you know, if you ever think that, you know, reading a passage or a chapter, that it's in some ways repeating something about some notation, some idea about the character or characters. If you find yourself going over the same ground, that probably means it needs to go. You know, that what writing is, good writing is, I think it's, in essence, I think it's always fresh. There's always something a little bit new that you're learning about the world and its inhabitants of the novel. And if you're not learning those things, or if you're kind of just showing us a different, you know, picture of the same thing, same idea, that's a clue for you to stop writing. And that's sometimes when I know that I've exhausted my own novel, is that, you know, I've written a scene and I think, you know, it's okay. It looks different, but essentially it isn't different. And it's not showing another, you know, new and I hope compelling facet of this psyche. And so that will tell me I'll stop or I'll cut.
Do you cut as you go along? In other words, on Wednesday, do you read what you wrote on Tuesday and say, no, I'm going to get rid of that? Or do you write the whole thing and then go back and start chopping?
I try to write the whole thing, because I don't want to put brakes on myself. And this is what I tell my students too. Just let yourself go. You know, don't be so persnickety as you go along, because that'll just put the brakes on you. And you know, writing novels is all about momentum. Afterwards, of course, you have to be very rigorous, ruthless, and ask really tough questions of the story. And that's for me how I try to do it. I try to get as much down as possible, see as, you know, put down as much as I can explore, because in those explorations are usually the things that are pretty interesting. And can lead to more interesting things, so I don't want to short circuit that or truncate that, and then after that happens, then you sit down with your red pen and your scissors and figurative scissors and do your work.
There's a great quote from Walter Mosley, wonderful writer, who said, "You know you're done when you read your book for the umpteenth time and you still find mistakes, but you no longer know how to fix them."
Yes. Well, and there's just the point of exhaustion, you know.
Yeah,
you
right,
run the
right.
marathon.
Right. And you know, you want to get wrapped in that, you know, cellophane thing and get a banana, really. Let's go to the phones. Rex is calling from Owings Mills. Rex, welcome to Midday with Chang-Rae Lee.
Thank you, Tom. And thank you, Professor Lee. I'm checking in kind of late, so the first thing I heard was when Tom is describing the character in your book, I believe the main character, as being a bit of an autodidact who is interested in oh so many things, and I have no idea what's his primary career, if you will. So I'm a retired academic from Hopkins. Tom, I think we share some connection in that. I'm a pulmonologist, so there, we leave it at that. But my background is I'm an immigrant from Hong Kong and Singapore. I grew up there. My mom is living out in Palo Alto, just came back from there. The weather is very different. But do you think this idea of someone who is interested in everything, is that something cultural? And what does that have to do with development for your character? And also, as a parent of bicultural, my wife is Swedish, how do we inculcate that? Because I do believe in the importance of the so-called, not curiosity index, but just being curious in life.
Yeah, well, the curiosity is what the, you know, his counterpart, Tiller, the young fellow, doesn't really have. He's got a good brain, but he doesn't have much curiosity. He needs to be sparked and goaded into really engaging with that part of himself. And And what Pong, this fellow, the main one of the main characters, has is this irrepressible wonder about things. He always wants to look at things, not just in an engineering way, to you know, and in a capitalist way to avail himself. But I think he just is really jazzed by it. You know, is that's how he feels alive. Now, of course, he's got his own issues, but I think with, you know, our kids and our children, you know, that's as much as I think we can hope for. You know, that they. You know, so many of our kids, especially in a certain kind of demographics, they're so programmed, right, by their school, by all their activities, by all the things that we want for them in terms of, you know, accomplishments and such. And it kills curiosity. It kills, you know, that kind of joy of just being and encountering something new. Which is, I think, the, you know, one of the most essential things about being human. And I think that's one of the things that the book tries to explore. The young man Tiller is a neophyte in the world, and he's just right now realizing how incredible the world really is. Incredibly wonderful, incredibly scary, incredibly sad too. And so that's, I think, you know, what I think about. I don't think it's a cultural thing. I think it's a human thing, and just something that I think all cultures have in common, really. I mean, look where we wouldn't have come so far in our civilization without that.
Well, thanks for that call, Dr. Rex. I appreciate it. And, you know, it is interesting. You did write two novels, in a way, because the story of Tiller and Val and Veej, this woman is in the witness protection program of all things, and they're laying low in this nondescript place. That's one story, and then this other story of these exotic adventures that Tiller has with Pong. But I wonder the balance between those two things. You have this sort of superstar Pong, and then Tiller, who thinks of himself as, you know, merely adequate. Are there things that both of those kinds of characters can tell us about the world, and the balance between them seems to be a good literary device.
Well, and what I wanted to have is both stories, because of course one story precedes the other in time. But the way that I wanted to have them experienced by the reader is that they're happening at the same time, and so we're kind of seeing what Tiller has learned in his year come to a certain kind of resolution or a certain kind of a reawakening in his story with, you know, his domestic story with Val, where, you know, the aftermath of all that. And one hopes that, you know, we get a sense that he's gained some wisdom and some insight.
Do you need to like your characters when you're spending 5 years with them?
Well, I think you need to be fascinated by them. My previous novels, some of the characters I did not like as people, and that's precisely why I was writing about them. They disturbed me. They alarmed me. They shook me in terms of, you know, my thinking about myself and about other people that I knew. And so I don't have to like them, but I have to have this almost unhealthy fascination with them to keep writing and to keep investigating. With Tiller and Pong, I must admit, I did like them.
Yeah, so did I.
For what it's worth. And it's a funny novel because, you know, most times you have a novel where, you know, I think most novels people read, there's some heavies in the novel, and although there's some heavies here, they're not heavies in the traditional sense or conventional sense. They're all people who are trying their best, who have their own reasons.
They are trying their best, and that's one of the things that draws the reader to them. They're wonderful to get to know. Chang Ray Lee is the author of 6 novels. His latest is terrific. It's called My Year Abroad. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I've enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
That's it for us today. Coming up Monday, a conversation with Isabel Mercedes Cumming, the Inspector General of the City of Baltimore. We'll talk about a few of her office's most recent investigations, and the arts journalist and publisher Kara Ober will join me with a preview of what's cooking in the visual arts world around town this spring. That's coming up Monday on Midday. Midday's director and engineer is Luke Spicknell. Rob Sivak is our senior producer. Jamila Krempel is our digital content director. Austin Coughlin from Clean Cuts wrote and recorded the Midday theme music. I'm Tom Hall. Reveal is up next after news at the top of the hour. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.
You're tuned to your NPR news station, member supported 88.1 WYPR.